people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble, 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 trouble.
Two, four,
three.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Good evening, Toronto. This is Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5.
Yep.
I am Steve DeSilva, and I'm here with my one and only co-host,
David Chin.
Yeah, Dave Chin. What are you saying tonight, Dave Chin?
I'm good. What's up?
Nothing much. This is our premiere show of Radio Basics.
Uh-huh. I mean,
we had our practice show last week, ran on the air on Thursday, but this is our first official launch of Radio Basics here up at CHRY 105.5. Radio Basics is a community radio program now, stemming out of Basics Community Newsletter, which is a grassroots newspaper project started by people in working class neighborhoods in Toronto. You can visit our website online to check out our archives of articles at basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. Is there anything you'd add to that, Mr. Chin?
No, sir. Let's get into the show.
All right. What do we got? So today we got a big show coming up, an important show. We're going to be starting with, we got some local news. We're going to be covering the results of the annual Justice for Aoi basketball tournament that happened this week in Pelham Park. We're going to be looking at the spree of killings that's happened over the last day in Toronto. In international news, we're going to be looking at the reactionary right-wing violence that has been plaguing Bolivia over the last couple weeks. We have a very special interview with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, a revolutionary organization in the United States. And finally, before we go out tonight, we're going to be talking a little bit about the elections coming up here in Canada. So without further ado, Dave, you want to take it off with the local?
Sure do, Steve. We had the first annual Justice for Aoi 3-on-3 basketball tournament this past Saturday, which was a wonderful success, despite the weather, which seemed not to agree with us. From about 3 o'clock onwards, it rained steadily through the entire tournament. Despite that, all the teams were playing intense games. Spectators stood there in the rain, watching the game in support for the Justice for Aoi movement.
There's like 20 teams out.
There's about 20 teams out, a lot of spectators, young men and women, involved and not involved in the campaign. First and foremost, I guess we should give shout-outs to the teams that won.
Yeah.
In the youth division, undefeated team, Pelham Park Young Set, ran through the competition.
Oh, and they only had 3 players. They didn't even have subs, eh?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Good to see the Portuguese Black connection on that team, representing mm-hmm. Pelham Park.
Indeed. And in the men's division, the championship team, also from Pelham Park, the community that we had the tournament in, was 5 Point, which had 4 players,
mm-hmm.
also undefeated, played absolutely amazing, both teams.
Mm-hmm. Now, Pelham only had, what, like 4 or 5 teams in the
tournament?
They
had 5 teams in the tournament.
Four of them made it to the finals.
And
four of them
divisions.
In the finals.
And the fifth team went to the semifinals, lost a close battle against another team from the neighborhood.
Yo, that's pretty crazy. So that's a shout out to all you other hoods out there, that there's big competition coming out of Pelham. But I mean, Dave, despite the fact that this was a lot of different hoods coming together, youth from different hoods, how was the atmosphere at the tournament?
The atmosphere was good. Everyone seemed to be in agreement with what it is that we're trying to do with the organization and campaign. That's to say that we had teams from Jane and Finch, Scarborough, Pelham, Markham, all over the city and outside the city, who all expressed discomfort, to say the least, and frustration and anger at the most, at the way in which young men, racialized, minoritized men, are being treated and victimized by the police in Toronto. We were sharing stories, negative encounters with the police. We were sharing Aoi's story. We had a lot of people out there listening and willing to get involved. So at bottom, people knew why we were out there, mm-hmm. and they were just there to support it regardless of the weather.
Mm-hmm. You know, what really impressed me as well is that I mean, people really got the sense that this was a grassroots initiative. You know, a lot of these youth, I'm sure, with the incredible talent that was out there, are used to playing in really big tournaments where they probably get, like, tons of sponsors to give lots of prizes and nonsense like that. But, like, you know, it was done on the cuff with very little money, I noticed. And, you know, but it was a really strong community initiative. And, like, people were down with that. Like, they didn't need the glitz or glamour, the smoke and mirrors, you know. People were down with playing a tournament in the community, by the community.
In unfavorable conditions, rain, slippery floors. People had the opportunity to get really hurt, seriously hurt, but they were still out there to play.
Yeah.
Spectators standing there in the rain, getting rained on all afternoon, stayed out. It was good to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. In other local news, it's been a bloody past day in the city, with three people killed and one wounded within 8 hours of each other yesterday. It all started at 11:47 a.m. Yesterday, when a 16-year-old student was shot in the abdomen in the parking lot of his school, Bendale Technical Institute, by Midland and Lawrence Avenue. He was shot during lunch break by someone who, according to witnesses, was attempting an armed robbery on one of the shooting victim's friends. Then at 4 p.m. at Reindeer Road in Mississauga, Parampreet Dinsa was shot while he sat in his SUV and later pronounced dead in hospital. An hour later, 16-year-old William Jr. Apaya, or Yoshi, was shot in the head behind an apartment building in Driftwood, Jane and Finch. He died at the scene. Finally, there was also a stabbing at 7:30 p.m. on Kennedy, south of Shepherd Avenue East. This wave of self-destructive horizontal violence is now being exploited by the Toronto Police, City Hall, and corporate media to justify an increase of police terror and brutality in our neighborhoods, a full-out handgun ban, and tougher gun sentences. The policy of putting armed cops in over 20 schools and over 20 Toronto high schools is being backed up by the school shooting, incidentally a school that didn't have cops in it at this point. With the media indicating it should be extended to new schools and officials justifying their presence. This while Bill Blair himself has said police presence would likely not have stopped the Bendale shooting, and with Julian Falconer, the author of the recent Falconer report, making a statement on CBC News to the effect that having armed police in schools, saying that the measure could be counterproductive since many communities feel discriminated and harassed by police already. As for politicians, Dalton McGuinty has come out for a complete handgun ban, despite the fact that nearly all guns used in these crimes are illegal to begin with, and that the leaders of the three major political parties have passed around the blame for being too lax on gun laws and are all calling for some type of restrictions on weapons, including Harper promising tougher sentences for weapons charges. In other words, typical responses that end up creating more crime, locking up more racialized youth, and doing nothing to address the root social and economic causes behind the ongoing violence. Most disturbing about the media, government and police calling for a beefing up of cop presence are two other killings that happened yesterday and today, which you probably didn't hear about. At 2 p.m. yesterday, Sarah Foy, a mother of four, was killed in a collision in Markham, prompted by police who punctured her tires with a spike belt, causing her to collide with a dump truck. She was being followed for suspected, quote-unquote, erratic driving. Meanwhile, at 4 a.m. in Brampton this morning, a 42-year-old man, Sean Rayleigh, was tasered by cops in custody while in a cell at No. 12 Division. He died in hospital. Both are now under investigation by the Special Investigations Unit of Ontario, but, you know, people should be demanding an independent inquiry into both of these deaths, because, as we know, the Special Investigation Unit isn't exactly an independent civilian body as it presents itself, however, a body stacked with ex-cops. Ex-cops, like in the Justice for Owie case, right? Like, recently in mid-June, the SIU exonerated the police officers of murdering Owie El Nadir, and also that same day exonerated police officers of murdering Byron DeBasige, both of whom were not doing anything wrong. Well, Byron DeBasige was murdered for stealing two lemons from a grocery store. So, in the past day of violence among youth and the two killings at the hands of police show us not only that there's a major problem of horizontal violence that needs to be addressed, that is to say, violence among the people, but that methods like intensified police measures, along with the expansion of the prison system, will clearly not help the situation, but further damage, harm, and in some cases, as we saw yesterday, even kill people. Meanwhile, community organizations opposed to the presence of police in Toronto schools are mobilizing and asking the question of whether armed police in schools is a good thing or not. One such organization is a Latino organization based out of Toronto by the name of Barrio Nuevo, which will be holding a community forum on Thursday, September 25th from 6 to 8 p.m. The event is going to be held at the Center for Spanish-speaking Peoples, which is located at 2141 Jane Street. If you'd like more information about this event, contact 416-417-0931 or barrionuevo.canada@gmail.com, which is barrionuevo.canada@gmail.com. So, you know, people in the community, if you can get out to that event, have your say on this issue and, you know, speak to people, other people of the communities, other organizations in the community that actually have a concern for this and, you know, not haven't necessarily made up their mind on the issue. Get out there, have your debate, have your voice heard. And as a community, we should be the ones deciding whether we want police in our schools. You know, we should weigh the evidence. We should weigh the facts. We should, you know, weigh out what has been, you know, the has police in our communities stopped crime? Has it stopped violence amongst the youth? Or has it exacerbated it by contributing to the violence by, you know, adding vertical violence from the police on top of the horizontal violence that already exists in our communities? So with that, let's go to a quick song and then we're going to go to a commercial break and we'll be right back.
Reminiscing on my past fears, cause shit was hectic on me last year. It appears that I've been marked for death. My heartless breath, the underlying cause of my arrest. My life is stressed, and no rest forever weary. My eyes stay teary for all the brothers that I buried in the cemetery. Shit is scary, I'm black on black, crime legendary. But at times unnecessary, I'm getting worried. Teardrops and closed caskets, the three strikes law is drastic. And certain death for us ghetto bastards. What can we do when we're arrested? But open fire, life in the pen ain't for me, cause I'd rather die. But don't cry through your despair. I wonder if the Lord still cares for us niggas on welfare. And who cares if we survive? The only time he notice a nigga is when he's clutching on the 4-5. My neighborhood ain't the same, cause all the little babies going crazy or they suffering in the game. And I swear it's like a trap, but I ain't giving up on the hood. It's all good when I go back. Oh, show me love, niggas give me props. Forever hot, cause it don't stop on my block.
What's that, a nigga? Yes,
on my block. That shit is constantly hot on my block. It never fails to be gunshots. Can't explain the mother's pain when her son drops. Black males living in hell, when will we prevail? Fear in jail, but crack sales got me living well. In a sense, I'm suicidal with this thug's life. Staying strapped, forever trapped in this drug life. God help me, cause I'm starving, can't get a job. So I resort to violent robbins, my life is hard. Can't sleep, cause all the dirt make my heart hurt. Put in work and shed tears for my dead peers. Misled from childhood where I went straight. To this day I still pray for a better way. Can't help but feel hopeless and heartbroken. From the start I felt the racism cause I'm dark. Couldn't quit the bullshit, make me represent. Hit the bar and played the star everywhere I went. In my heart I felt alone out here on my own. I closed my eyes and picture home on my block.
Yeah, on my block with snitch ass niggas like Potter right over there.
Third Toronto, we're back. Radio Basics. We'll be getting into international news right now with Steve. If you would kindly take it away, sir.
I will indeed take it away, Dave Chin. Thank you very much. In international news, September 11th is a day that many people will never forget, especially Chileans, for whom September 11th is a day that their popular socialist leader, Salvador Allende, was assassinated and replaced with one of Latin America's most ruthless right-wing dictatorships, the CIA-backed dictator Augusto Pinochet. And if Americans, South or North, had thought that the days of military coups and right-wing takeovers in Latin America was a thing of the past, we only need to look to Bolivia today, where 35 years after the assassination of Salvador Allende, we can observe another destabilization campaign unfolding. Starting September 9th in northern Bolivia, in the state of Cobija, what began as right-wing gangs carrying out violent attacks and plundering of public institutions has escalated into an orgy of violence by right-wing gangs across the country, which now threaten Bolivia with an all-out civil war. On the night of September 11th, the state-owned TV station in Santa Cruz was attacked and nearly burnt to the ground by fascist mobs because of its criticisms of the rich oligarchy in Bolivia. Countless other institutions have been sacked, raided, and burnt. In southern Bolivia, in Tarija, right-wing mobs have attacked peasant marketplaces with Molotov cocktails, while indigenous peoples and their organizations elsewhere have been targeted with intimidation and massacres. Meanwhile, the government of Brazil announced on September 10th that they were willing to negotiate directly with the ruling class interests in Cobija and Tarija, as long as they didn't block the export of oil and gas to Brazil. On September 12th, over 1,000 farmers marched against the fascist violence from the city of Cobija, which is currently under the right-wing governorship of Leopoldo Fernandez. The march of farmers, peaceful though it was met with a barrage of bullets being shot into the crowd by snipers sitting in treetops. At least 25 people are pronounced dead, with more wounded and some 106 people missing. Fernandez was arrested on Tuesday and transported to the capital. All this violence comes at a time when left-wing Bolivian President Evo Morales and the popular parliamentary grouping Movement Towards Socialism are working towards holding a referendum concerning constitutional changes that would even out the major economic inequalities in Bolivia. Given that Morales and the socialist movement in Bolivia are vastly popular among Bolivians, the elite know that the referendum will easily pass, and thus they have turned to destabilizing violence to disrupt the social transformation from moving forward. In response to America's support of the right-wing violence in the country, the Bolivian president has expelled the American ambassador to Bolivia, Philip Goldberg. The left-wing President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela has responded in kind in a show of solidarity with its neighbor Bolivia by expelling its own American ambassador. The American government has in the past used similar tactics to destabilize the revolutionary government of Venezuela. The governments of Ecuador and Honduras offered their diplomatic support to Bolivia and Venezuela for their decisions to expel the American diplomats. The American ambassador who was expelled, Philip Goldberg, is no amateur when it comes to overseeing destabilizing right-wing violence while on his diplomatic missions. During his time in Yugoslavia in the 1990s, the diplomat Goldberg played a major role in helping stir up separatist violence in that country before and after the U.S. and NATO aerial bombing campaign in 1999, which left thousands of people dead. Goldberg also worked in Pristina, Kosovo, more recently at a time when the American government was giving full support to Kosovo's illegal breakaway from Serbia. The Kosovar government is notorious for having known war criminals, mafia leaders, and major drug dealers in its government, and Kosovo's ruling class is particularly well known for its intermediary role in the opium trade between Afghanistan and Europe and the rest of the world. As of today, President Morales was calling on the separatist leaders to end their drive for violence and sit down to negotiations. At the same time, President Morales is not backing down from the right-wing terror and is continuing to call for a date to be set for the referendum on constitutional reform. So with that, we're going to go to a song by famous Venezuelan folk singer Ali Primera, who wrote most of his music in the dark days of the 1970s and 80s Latin America. The prolific songwriter's music continues to serve as a tremendous source of inspiration for revolutionary Latin America today, as well as an important reminder of the days of military dictatorships and fascist coups, which most Latin Americans would rather never see again. This is Ali Primera, Yankee Go Home.
América Latina obrera, no sé por qué no lo haces. El yanqui teme a la revolución. El yanqui teme grito, yanqui gojón, yanqui gojón. Y viene remontando el Amazonas, el grito rebelde del Carioca, y viene a unirse con su hermano, el obrero venezolano. América Latina obrera, América Latina obrera, América Latina. Levante en tus manos la bandera de la revolución, América Latina obrera, y grite con fuerza, Yankee go home, Yankee go home, Yankee go home.
Los obreros de América Latina te dicen gringo, go home, Yankee, go home. América Latina, obrera, y grita con fuerza, Yankee go home, Yankee go home, Yankee go home.
All right, we are back.
Yes, sir.
Coming up next, we have an important interview with Fred Hampton Jr. of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, which is a revolutionary organization in the United States. At a time when Americans are facing an electoral showdown between John McCain and Barack Obama, some organizations in the United States really don't seem to think it matters who the next president will be. One of those organizations is the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, which maintains that the people have no choice but to organize, and that voting really doesn't matter in the lives of people. What do you think about that, Dave?
I think we should play the video or the audio of the interview and see what Chairman Fred has to say about this.
And let him speak for himself?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do it. And forgive us for our technical difficulties. We're still getting the hang of this. Radio Basics.
Radio Basics.
This is the Basics Community Newsletter. I'm Steve DeSilva. I'm here with my correspondent, Nadine Al-Qassem. We are in Chicago, Illinois today on August 5th, 2008. And we're just standing outside 2337 West Monroe, which is the historic site of the assassination of Fred Hampton by Chicago police. And we're just across the way from the also the historic site of the headquarters of the Chicago Black Panther Party. Chicago chapter of the Black Panther Party, and I'm here with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee. At a time when the Chicago police have been going on a rampage, they've shot 12 people and killed 6 in the last month. What exactly is going on here right now in Chicago?
Basically, say real revolutionary appreciation for having me with you today. Basically, it's business as usual. You know, for the city of Chicago, you know what I'm saying, wherever U.S. imperialism is at and wherever its tentacles reach. As you just pointed out, right, we are literally standing right in front of the site, which we refer to as one of the ground zeros, black and other oppressed communities. And I say ground zero because it's the site in which one of the most brutal acts of terrorism occurred on U.S. soil. And I say that, I'm not talking about September 11th, I'm talking about December 4th, 1969. Day in which the United States government via the Chicago Police Department assassinated Chairman Fred Hampton, defense guy Lamar Clark. At that time, the mayor of Chicago was Daley, we referred to as Gangster Daley Sr. And it was part of the brutal counterinsurgency, in particular the COINTEL program. Plain expression, they continue counterinsurgency. In other words, the continued war, the continued attack on our leadership, our movements, and the people in general is some of the numbers you just pointed out. About the 12 shootings by Chicago Pigs, the 6 murders. I want to point out, too, that the president of Chicago was Gangster Daley Jr., the son of the man who was in place when Chairman Fred was assassinated in 1969. This is the modus operandi. How the police get down? Because reality is, ain't no war on drugs, no war on guns, no war on gangs. It's war on, you know, on black and other oppressed communities. And even, you know, in case after case, you know what I'm saying, as soon as the shooting go down, you hear the police say stuff like, "Well, it's justified shooting," so on and so forth. But I just want to point out also, there's some heavy resistance happening out here too. I just recently, this past July 25th, in fact, last Friday, was just locked up in response to resistance that was waged, you know what I'm saying, against Chicago Pigs over there in the 7th District on the southwest side of Chicago in the heart of Inglewood. Myself and a number of other from other organizations that came in response to some pigs terrorizing the community. But it's important the world hear this and see what's going on, especially in contrast to what the U.S. propaganda they're putting out, especially with this whole election or selection, whatever the case would be, you know what I'm saying, with people getting caught up with this whole facade, the smoke and mirrors thing about whether it be a woman running for president of the United States, or in particular right now, it's the first, they say African-Americans running for president, if a lot of people are under pressure, everything is okay in the states, in Chicago in particular. In fact, let the record reflect that Barack Obama's U.S. Senator that's supposed to be from Chicago, who has never addressed, acknowledged the atrocities that go down on a day-to-day basis right in this city, and even the atrocities such that the United Nations itself acknowledged Chicago as a torture capital of the country. And just in fact, I think it was last month, myself, along with our Minister of Defense, Aaron Patterson, who was a political prisoner, who was also tortured by Chicago police, who was prosecuted by now Mayor Daley, who was then the state's attorney, under the infamous Lieutenant John Burge. Obama nor all of these minions of Gangsta Daley have addressed or acknowledged these contradictions, you know what I'm saying? And when they do, if they do, they try to put in some sort of abstract nostalgia, type, well, that's how bad things was in the 60s or during the tenure of John Burge in the 80s. But the reality is, with those numbers and that direct reflect also, a lot of these cases of police terrorism are not even documented, you know what I'm saying? The black community is put in such a state of terror that they even terrorize, they acknowledge it's terrorism. We, in response, we've also put several campaigns where we get the African anti-terrorism bill. We say police brutality is a euphemism, but the reality is police terrorism.
If you could tell us a little bit more about the general work of the POCC and your approach in bringing families together, for example, who have been affected by police terror and whose sons, daughters, brothers, sisters.
POCC is an acronym for Prisoners of Conscience Committee. It's also known as the Panther Cubs. And one of our main jobs of the POCC is to maintain the legacy of one of the most revolutionary organizations in North America, that being the Black Panther Party. The reality is that organization was under serious attack. It just didn't fade away. It was military defeated as a result of the United States government's COINTELPRO, an acronym for counterintelligence program. The task and our responsibility that we've inherited is to make sure the legacy of the Black Panther Party, you know what I'm saying, remains intact. And one of the tactics that we adopted from Black Panther Party is to literally turn the communities into classrooms. You know, in other words, we don't engage with Chairman Fred referred to as, a lot of people engage with what he called intellectual masturbation. Mm-hmm. They just give us a whole bunch of theory, but they, you know what I'm saying, ain't doing no action. We say we recognize the importance that we must wed theory with practice, you know. And we know the visionary, Minister U.E.P. Newton, said that people learn best through observation and participation. We just ain't out here running a whole bunch of rhetoric talking about you dig, the police is bad, and it's also, you know, so we need to get some sensitivity training for the police and they going through. We know that what the Sandinistas said in Latin America, that the will of the people is greater than the man's technology. So in these cases, regardless how many guns or badges they got, or how many law books they come with, you know, so we organize the mass, whether it be in the case of Aaron Harrison, who was gunned down August 2nd, right on the west side of Chicago last year. You know what I'm saying? The case of Michael Walker, Brittany Green, Daryl Hamilton on the east side. We've been strategically, you know what I'm saying, mobilizing these forces throughout the city, in fact, throughout the country. Better than that, you know what I'm saying, throughout we are an international organization throughout the world. And we respect no colonial borders, you know what I'm saying? We recognize we cannot afford the luxury to set trip. So to do the work, we've been, you know what I'm saying, getting these various forces together. Chicago has an infamous history. One of the phenomenons is here is the phenomenon of the street tribes. We refer to them as the unpoliticized street tribes. We use that term as opposed to referring to them as gangs. We see that misnomer, that term gangs should be correctly applied to the pigs. And we say worst gang Chicago, Chicago Police Department, the worst gang LA is the LA Police Department, so on and so forth. So that being said, we don't see this similar to the spirit how Chairman Fred, who organized the Real Deal Rainbow Coalition, contrary to a lot of people been talking, it was Jesse Jackson, was Chairman Fred, who organized the Real Deal Rainbow Coalition, formed principal coalitions of scientific relationships, where he took such organizations as the Young Patriots, a group of poor whites, out of the Appalachian Mountains and brought them to some point of political unity. He was right on the west side of Chicago, politicized the vice lords, some point of unity, and they subsequently ended up working at the Free Medical Center. Even at the FBI, the major police force in this country tried to make a deal with the vice lord, told them they would give them 16th Street, a portion of the west side, if they would not let a Black Panther Party to open a free medical center on 16th Street. The Chairman Fred was able to transcend these tactics and again win these forces at some point of political unity, as even with the then known Devil Disciples, won them to a point of unity where they got up publicly. We now recognize ourselves to be known as the Black Disciples due to the political education we received from Chairman Fred and the Black Panther Party, and they ended up working the Free Breakfast Program. So in that spirit, you know, say in the fight for power, we say when Minister Eupin said power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. So this again takes seizing this phenomenon with these unpoliticized street tribes, seizing phenomena, and again approaching from a realistic point of view, winning the various points of unity. And we say we do distinguish the difference between the revolution and the war. We say you know, everybody got to play some role. Everybody ain't gonna be no front line freedom fighter. Everybody ain't gonna be no revolutionary. We have different campaigns and tactics that we've implemented that people can engage in the revolutionary act. And a lot of times, you know, saying people might not know, they might see the end result of this, and they might not can't credit to where it come from. And what it's important that people understand is not that we ego tripping, but to understand the importance of the movements of people. They make the connection. The movements, you know what I'm saying? The people make history. Case example, a lot of people might see the end result. They say Kanye West, you know what I'm saying, to the stands he did, when you say about George Bush not liking black people, in reference to the situation down in New Orleans, we refer to it as Hurricane America, not Hurricane Katrina. We say, get credit where credit's due. It was the United States government responsible for those deaths. But the reality, it was the POCC that literally sat down 8 hours before, with Kanye West, 8 hours before he did that statement at Borders Bookstore, north side of Chicago, and was able to win him to a revolutionary act. A lot of people got misunderstood and try to make him out a revolutionary. That was a revolutionary act that he engaged in. Similar to that, you know, saying, like, doing this in the 60s, it was a movement in place. James Brown had a whole totally different song playing at first. He wasn't talking about singing I'm Black and I'm Proud. It was forces such as Imam Jamil Al-Amin, being known as H.R. Brown, that drove down on him literally and told him, you better go back to the studio with that garbage you're talking about. James Brown came back out to him, I'm Black and I'm Proud. He couldn't pull that stunt he pulled later, in the Rocky movie, with the red, white, and blue drawers on, talking about living in America. So we understand that there must be movements in place up to Andy, you know, saying the wind cast some points of unity. And that's the type of things the POCC is engaged in Chicago, Oakland, California, Detroit, the same, in fact, throughout the world. And some of our tactics, you know, so a lot of people, you know, to critical us, our tactics have been intense, but you know, some we say these are intense times. In fact, this new thing a lot on a national, or better yet, an international scene with this phenomenon, Barack Obama, so, you know, a new thing. When they first tried to bring this Maturin candidate up in Chicago, when he's running for senator, you know what I'm saying, at the Hip Hop Summit, there was the POCC, you know what I'm saying, that drove down on the podium, and told him, you know what I'm saying, along with our Minister of Defense, Aaron Patterson, and the coalition with other organizations such as Voice of Ex-Offenders, refused this cat entry to come on stage unless he took some point of unity to hold an African anti-terrorism be a poster. And he struggled, you know, so, he didn't want to do it. He got the message. We stood adamant in opposition. Ain't nothing happened. A lot of people were very critical of us. Said, man, y'all shouldn't do that. He's going to be the first black U.S. senator from Illinois. In opposition, well, we don't care if he's going to be the first black Martian. If he don't, if it ain't working in the interest of the people, we're not here. So he subsequently, you know, saying united, you know what I'm saying, still some resentment in it, but he grabbed a post and came on the thing with it. But this type of thing, and it's not just no politician, it's ain't no Tough Tony thing we doing either. We didn't allow this punk Puffy Combs to come in Chicago with that voted that garbage, you know what I'm saying? Because our position is organized at that, and no people, you know what I'm saying, whether it be black, brown, any color, should be subjected to such six statements as vote or die. That's sending a message to the ruling class, anybody else, that, you know, that's a guarantee that I'm going to vote. I voted once in my life. Now for Aaron Patterson, I'm in his defense, when he was running for the state rep, and it was used as a tool, as a tactic, both as contradictions. On the first one, on his platform, he had the African anti-terrorism bill on top of his platform. And we had a campaign, even with the 2004 election, like people call it election. People say, well, what's your opposition with this person, a black? We said, we don't care, they're going to be running for garbage collecting Detroit, Michigan, or the president of the United States. We have a thing we call math for the masses. Again, math for the masses. And you ain't got to be no calculus to understand it. Deal is, if they take no position on political prisoners, they take no, plus they take no position on reparations, plus they take no position on the African anti-terrorism bill, that equals no vote. So we go on offense with it. We put these cats on the stand. What's their position with the one in the community? We say these cats should be able to just pop up during election time or February, and you know what I'm saying, pop up, and the community don't know these people from a can of, don't know them from a can of paint, don't recognize them, nothing, and just be so happy, so okay, we'll vote for them. No, just because some sort of criteria that comes with dealing with us, and this is some of the campaigns and tactics the POCC has been engaged in.
Now, if I can ask you a question about the legacy of the Black Panther Party here in America.
Yes, Radio Basics, you're listening to the words of Fred Hampton Jr. We're going to take a commercial break and be back with the rest of that interview.
Radio Basics, we are back. We're getting back at the Basics Community Newsletter interview with Fred Hampton Jr. in Chicago.
The conspiracy of silence, or an altogether disinformation and misinformation campaign by the ruling classes or even other organizations that claim to speak in the name of the Panthers but ain't carrying out things in the same way. The youth today are somewhat unclear, a lot of the youth, on what the history of the Panthers is. I was wondering if you can speak a little bit about that legacy and some of the other organizations that are claiming to speak on that, and like what is the true way forward in the legacy of the Panthers for the youth today.
Let the record reflect, Black Panther Party was a revolutionary organization. It started in October 1966 by Minister Dewey P. Newton and Chairman Bobby Seale. Largest chapter of the Black Panther Party grew to be in Illinois. Illinois was a chapter. Chairman Frey was a deputy chairman for Illinois. And I stress revolutionary organization. And that recognize their fault for self-determination, you dig? And I say and self-determination, I just want to really stress the importance of that, you know, so the people can speak in their own interest, and that's something that should not be taken lightly, where people can, you know, say, fight to speak in their own interest. A lot of different organizations, a lot of different forces claim that they with that, they support that, but they're really not with it, you know what I'm saying? It's, you know, saying people say, well, let us articulate your pain for you, so on and so forth. And we say what Stephen Biko said in the Black Conscious Movement, man, that people must learn the ability to distinguish intelligence from the ability to articulate. And the reality is that, you know, saying that the masses, they may not be too articulate in speaking this bastard language, English. You know what I'm saying? But the reality is they're very intelligent. Chairman Fred gave an extraordinary example how they be right in front of the breakfast program, and the pigs rattle up on these sisters in front of the breakfast program. They say, are you for capitalism? And sisters say, no, Chairman Fred said capitalism really ain't no cool thing. And the pig said, what about socialism? And sisters say, well, I really can't debate with you on the terms, all that. I'm really not clear on that. And the pig said, what about this free breakfast program? And the sisters say, dude, this was feeding my kids. If you attempt to, y'all, what type of language y'all keep on here?
We can edit it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the sisters would tell the pigs, you did, if you tell me, we'll blow your mind brains out, because people recognize that was their programs, you know what I'm saying? So again, they wear the theory in practice. It's and through my work, through our work, I'm on a day-to-day basis, I'm continuing to understand, you know what I'm saying, and see the continuous attack, you know what I'm saying, on the Black Panther Party, and as well as the legacy, because, you know, right on the street a few years ago, it was an attempt to by the POCC along with the December 4th committee, they had this street named in honor of Chairman Fred. It was an international uproar. The Fraternal of the Police, Gangsta Daily came out. You know, in fact, we ended up catching, they brought out a lot of the Negro minions, a lot of the aldermen. The former alderman, Madeline Hitchcock, she folded like a chief suit. You know, she broke down in Cowtown to daily pressure. It's a movie that we recommend everyone see called The Audio Rebellion. The Audio Rebellion. It shows the actual footage. It shows former Deputy Minister of Defense, Bobby Rush, U.S. Congressman, actually pressing and federal charges on our misinformation. You get trumped up charges where you wait to say, and calling for the FBI to lock up members of the POCC. So expose a lot of contradictions, you know what I'm saying? This battle for the street side. And a lot of times people say, why is it such an attack? You know, so, you know, on the Black Panther Party, why was such an attack levied on them? A lot of people got it misunderstood and say, well, the Black Panther Party had an internal contradiction. That's why they were destroyed. Nothing could be further from the truth. A lot of organizations got internal contradictions. Mm-hmm. The reality is that COINTELPRO, over 90% of it was directed to the Black Panther Party, because this government feared an organization, basically a group of brothers and sisters ranging from ages 14 to 24 years old, standing up on their terms, you know what I'm saying? The state didn't classify Chairman Fred as a chairman. You dig? The people recognize him as Chairman Fred. Now, that's important to understand. We had to check this criminal reporter for Chicago Defender, some of you call it Chicago Offender newspaper. Lady Strasberg, you know, said she kept referring to Chairman Fred's wife, my mother, Cool and Jerry, then known as Deborah John, she kept referring to his girlfriend. And the whole political significance of it, you know, saying this is an organization unlike a lot of other organizations, that they said the state was the adversary, the state was oppressing them. They said it on Monday, they meant it on Tuesday, you know, so they was consistent with it. So they didn't feel that they could be talking about the state one day and go look for validation from that same state and say, okay, is my relationship valid? If they say this is my wife, it's my wife. If they say this is the chairman, it's the chairman. Dr. Satchel was the Minister of Health, the Black Panther Party was official organ that deemed that. A lot of other organizations have asked me all the time, well, are y'all charted? No, we don't pride ourselves. No, we not. We don't pride ourselves, you know what I'm saying, being validated by the same state that we said is responsible for laying these atrocities down on us, man. But this has been a strategic attempt, you know what I'm saying, by a lot of forces, you know what I'm saying, again, to hijack and water down the Black Panther Party represented. This done for a number of reasons, you know what I'm saying? We can go straight out in the forest and 10th Street, you know, straight out state things, or, you know, to opportunism or just liberalism, you know what I'm saying? And we say, point, you know, we up front, the POCC, you know what I'm saying? We the official caretakers, you know what I'm saying? This legacy, you know what I'm saying? We say it's very important. And regardless of who, you know what I'm saying, who it is, we'll call the question on, you know what I'm saying? In fact, we say with us, the legacies are more important than our life. Because with our life, we have a certain amount of time for us to be here. A legacy serves as a prototype or as an example for people to fight in the future. If you don't cross the T's and dot the I's, that can distinguish Reverend Nat Turner being seen as a crazy madman or revolutionary, you know what I'm saying? And they even try to say Black Panther Party, everything from a racist organization to a gang, you know, some of this is very important that we show this is a revolutionary organization that stood up and fought on its terms, you know, to fight for self-determination.
And that leads me to a final question and your final thoughts about how BASICS, that is whose most important task it is to help people organize themselves and stimulate people to form into mass organizations to fight against the police brutality, the state brutality, the housing corporation brutality. What are some lessons that you can pass on to us so that we can move forward in our struggle and so that people realize the significance and the importance of struggling for what they believe in and also for decent conditions and a right to exist without being humiliated and brutalized on a daily basis?
Again, I can't reiterate enough the whole importance of, you know, recognizing and respecting people's right to self-determination. POCC prides itself on forming principal coalitions. We have coalitions with different organizations, Native Youth Movement, amongst others, and we say one of the principal things is us form a coalition, even with other black people. We say, you know, first was primary is respect. In fact, we say no respect, no rap. In other words, the respect ain't there. We can't engage no dialogue. But we sit down, you know, so we play into the ground. You know, type of struggles other forces are going through, and we say we got their back like a backpack. In other words, we'll support them, but it got to be mutual. Like the respect got to be mutual. We just came back, in fact, a few months ago on a black and brown principal unity tour. We went down. You know what I'm saying? We went down to L.A. and there was some different contradictions down there, you know what I'm saying? And we addressed it from a scientific point of view. A lot of people would like to water it down just to this old abstract morality thing, like, you know, these catches all of a sudden just start fighting each other. Now, we had to deal with some contradictions. We had to expose some real deal contradictions. Like, I mean, how some of these catches on the payroll up inside them caps and them shoes. Some cases that documented where some of these forces paid to attack black, you know, black prisoners, and even how, you know, the state strategically and imperialism. In fact, the British was very tactful in this here, how they would dole out certain concessions to one oppressed community, you know what I'm saying, at the expense of, you know what I'm saying, vamping another community. We've seen in occupied Azania with people from South Africa, you know what I'm saying, how they would dole out certain things to the Indian community, you know what I'm saying, to the community. And we've seen some attacks being implemented in L.A. With the brown and black and brown community. So we say, you know, respecting the thing about self-determination is essential. And also, if you say, with tactics, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You dig? I'm talking about we can tweak them, you know what I'm saying, we'll make it applicable to this day and time. But it's a visionary minister, Huey P. Newton stated, power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in desired manner. You gotta study the people, see what's phenomenal. You know what I'm saying? The people are very intelligent, you know what I'm saying? They gotta be doing something right.
That was Fred Hampton Jr. talking about the upcoming elections in America and, among other things, other issues affecting African-American communities throughout the states. Now, before bringing it back to more of a local context of the elections, I think what needs to be followed up with what Fred Hampton was talking about in the earlier part of his interview is an important qualification, one which people thinking about the elections or even perhaps participating in them later on in the next couple of months in the United States is Barack Obama's skin color alone? Does that make him someone who speaks for all the poor racialized people in the states? Does he have some sort of intrinsic connection to a single black mother struggling in Brooklyn simply because of his skin color? Or does he have more in common with someone like George Bush as someone who's a Harvard graduate Christian male who is quite wealthy? We've seen in other cases historically, Papa Doc in Haiti or in South Africa after the apartheid, that national liberation struggles are extremely important to all of our work and our initiatives. But if they're not followed up with the proper government, if it's not followed up with something that's not exploitative and oppressive, you might be stuck in the exact same position you were before. So before concluding the show, we're going to bring it back to Steve for a little discussion, a little news on the upcoming elections right here in Canada.
Well, you know, one of the campaigns of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee is what they call Math for the Masses, which is basically a number of points that highlight that if politicians are not speaking to those points for the black community, if the politicians are not speaking to political prisoners, black political prisoners, if politicians are not speaking to reparations for the black community, if politicians are not speaking on the what the POCC calls the African anti-terrorism bill, then why would you vote for these people if they're not speaking in your interests, although they pretend to speak in your interests? So here in Canada, with the upcoming elections, and Canadians should be asking the same questions. Do any of the major political parties out there support or promote the interests of the average Canadian? Basics Community Newsletter published an article today that deals with this exact question, and I'm going to read from some parts of it for those of you who, for those of our listeners who do not have access to a computer or the internet, and for those of you who do, just visit basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com to see the full interview. Now, reading from parts of the interview, from the article, I should say, it begins, voting rates, especially amongst working people in Canada, have been on the decline over the last 20 years. In the three last federal elections, around a third of the population did not vote, with the 2004 election ranking as the lowest voter turnout since the 1867 Confederation of Canada. For people under the age of 30, non-voters are in the overwhelming majority, with roughly three-quarters of young voters refusing to cast a ballot. Non-voting is also split along class lines. On average, the rich vote and the working class doesn't. The government, media, academics give various reasons for the decline in voting, for the rise of television, to the decline in newspaper readership, to various other cultural changes. The solutions they offer range from more civic education classes in high schools to bringing in some form of proportional representation. Maybe the real reason workers don't vote is more straightforward, maybe more fundamental even. Maybe the reason so many working people don't vote is because they see that none of the political parties represent their interests. This is not apathy, it's a perfectly rational choice. Working people are not going to vote if none of the political parties deserve their support, no matter how many voting campaigns are carried out or what the system of elections are what form of system of elections is used. The conditions for working people in this country have been on the decline since the late 1970s, with stagnant wages and growing poverty. How have the parties responded to this? Once in power, every party at every level of government has done not only nothing to stop this decline, they brought in the policies that help make it happen. The Liberals and Conservatives have just been taking turns at shredding the social wage of the working class, cutting back on support for unemployed workers, making higher education more and more expensive, underfunding public transit, and so on and so forth. The government, no matter which party is in control, always claims that the social wage needs to go because we no longer have any money. But when the monopoly corporations ask for subsidies, or if there's a war against a third world people that they claim needs to be fought, all of a sudden money is found. Little better can be expected out of the smaller parties such as the NDP or the Green Party. The NDP has shown its true colors from its time in provincial government. While making nice sounding promises once in power, they do little to benefit workers because to do so would upset the monopoly corporations that run the economy. Rather than fight back, they cave in. So if voting doesn't matter, what can people do? As the POCC in the United States says, organize. Organize in your workplace, in your schools, in your communities. Massive pressure works. Mass pressure works. Every issue of Basics has examples of mass struggles from all over the world that have organized their communities, won concessions from the state, and created new forms of people's power. No matter which party wins the elections, the people will need to mobilize to defend their interests. With that said, Radio Basics, we're out. This is another issue of Radio Basics. You can visit us online at Basics Community Newsletter or basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a few new hosts. I'll be back in a month. You can tune in every other Wednesday, 8 to 9. We're out.
Tell the people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble. Trouble.
Radio Basics. And there's always a message involved.